Hi, I'm Erica McIntyre, Content Director of Jason's Connection. Today, Jason Harris will be talking to Jill Gibney, a wife, mom, office manager for a small marketing firm, social media maven, and only recently an accidental advocate for people with disabilities, even though she was born without her right femur. She started social media accounts under the name The Handy Slap, a humorous take on the very unfunny problem of people abusing handicap parking, after successfully winning a battle with a construction dumpster via Twitter that was placed by the city at a handicap meter in downtown Cincinnati.
Thank you for joining us. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm a 37-year-old Northside regular. I have a great family. I have really, even though I've been disabled my entire life, I've sort of just kind of forgotten about that aspect of myself, and only recently has it really kind of come into play as far as, I guess, my identity or something that I should really be kind of a little more supportive of.
And tell us about this, because it seems like it's more something that other people remind you of. Well, what is it that people sort of see you as, and how do you see yourself?
Well, for a long time, people just saw me as a bartender. I've been a bartender for a pretty long time. So despite having a fake leg, it didn't really bother anybody because, I don't know, people love happy hour. I don't really know how people see me. I don't know that it's, I guess it's just kind of a way of like how you see everybody else. You know what I mean? It's not really a, there's not a distinct difference. You don't really see somebody as having like brown hair or in a wheelchair or whatever. Once you become friends with them, they're just your friends, you know?
Mm-hmm. And you said, so what is it that, so tell us about your disability. How does it affect you and everything? Does it not, how does it not affect you?
Well, I was born with proximal focal femoral deficiency, which is just kind of nicknamed PFFD. It is a pretty infrequent birth defect. It's, they have no idea what causes it. It's not from, it's not a genetic thing necessarily. It's nothing that I can, you know, potentially pass on to future generations. But basically it's just being born with either some or none of your femur, but having everything else. So I have my hip, I have my knee, I have my tibia, fibula, everything else is just the femur that's, there's like kind of different degrees. You either have some of it, most of it, or none of it, and I'm somewhere between the some of it and none of it category. So I had a foot amputation when I was 7, and then I had a knee amputation / bone graft fusion surgery type thing with a plate when I was a teenager. So kind of 2 amputations in my younger days, and a great prosthetic team. I have a really fancy brand new leg right now, which is pretty cool. It's my first microprocessor knee, and so that's been a little bit challenging to get used to after you've had just like a regular knee your whole life. But it's really exciting, and since I've always worn a prosthesis, I've been able to see how the industry has changed for the better, because my first leg was far different from this one. But yeah, it doesn't, aside from that, you know, there are certain things I can't do, like water parks are not necessarily my friend, but for the most part, I haven't really let it slow me down or get in my way. Anything that I've ever really wanted to do, it's just like, I'll try it, and if it works, it works, and if it doesn't, then oh well.
Mm-hmm. No, I can imagine one of the reasons that you've had to think about this more is the Medicare budget cuts, and how does it affect how does that affect you and other people who are missing limbs or need prosthesis or something like that?
This thing, so only recently I've sort of been aware of it, even though it's there was a petition floating around because I was I recently started following the Amputee Coalition of America page, and so there was a Medicare proposal restricting access to prosthetic limbs and sort of bringing everybody back to like the days before the ADA, or you know, basically back into the 70s standard of care. So one of the things that they wanted to deny access to, like, and it was specifically with Medicare, but anything, it would preclude amputees from using a prosthesis if they failed to meet the sort of standard of the appearance of a natural gait while using the prosthesis. Now, when you have no femur and you have a leg like mine, I definitely do not have a natural gait. So I was horrified to read the proposal. And so, I just started beating the drum as much as I could, because typically, even though I'm under, you know, my own personal policy, I do know that the private healthcare industry kind of tends to follow Medicare's lead. So if this were to pass in Medicare, then it would eventually trickle down into private healthcare as well, which is everybody at that point. A lot of amputees are on Medicare. I just happen to be one of the ones who isn't. It was still a very, you know, I'm not sure what the percentage of people are on Medicare, but it would be a huge portion, in my opinion, of amputees that would be affected by this proposal, and eventually including myself. So I made a little picture of my husband and I where I'm balancing on my unuseful prosthesis, and we're kissing, and shared that with the Amputee Coalition of America page, and then also it sort of leaked onto my personal page as well, because I have a couple of friends who are tied into it. So it kind of got out there a little bit.
Now, they have gotten 100,000 signatures they need to get onto the president's desk. What happens from there now that it's on the president's desk and he's going to review it?
That is a very good question. So I got an email, that same email that everybody else got. It was basically like, we'll be in touch soon. And it's from the We the People team. So now we know that it's up to President Obama, which honestly I feel very positive about, because historically he's been very supportive of Americans with disabilities. He was the one to sort of dismiss the whole notion of a pre-existing condition, which was huge for so many amputees and other people with disabilities as well. If anybody has a disability, they already know the implications of like switching a policy and having your disability be marked as a pre-existing condition. So with that out of the way, I feel pretty okay with President Obama's policies so far on disabled Americans. So I'm just crossing my fingers, it's like everybody else.
So some people might be wondering, why is it such a big deal that it's going back to, aren't all prostheses sort of the same or do the similar thing? Is there a reason that you were saying it's such a big deal?
Well, it's kind of like anything else. I mean, nobody wants to go back to using a telephone from the 1970s. You know, everybody has a computer in their pocket. And now I finally have one in mine, too, in a funny way. But it's just really, there's no reason to move backwards, especially in the industry of, like, orthotics and prosthetics. Like, the advances that they're making have been incredibly useful to amputees and have provided a better quality of life and a lot more autonomy. And so there's really, I mean, you're basically, you know, for myself, for example, if they decided like, oh, because I don't have a natural gait, we're not going to let you have access to prosthetic care anymore, then I would end up having to be in a wheelchair because I can't walk around. I can't just hop around. I have arthritis in my other foot now, so I can't just like hop around the city. Plus, it would be fairly exhausting anyway. But the additional aspect of this proposal is that even if they said, okay, no leg for you, Jill, you have to be in a wheelchair, they're also not going to help me cover my wheelchair costs. So it's just like it becomes this thing where I'm, you know, do I just stay stuck in my house all day? You know, I enjoy having a good quality of life, and I don't think that anybody should, you know, be denied that.
Oh, totally. And I think sort of what ties into this is the campaign you started about the Handy Slap. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, this is kind of a funny thing, but there was, as Erica mentioned, there was a dumpster on Central Parkway that was kind of set down in front of a handicapped spot. And so I went to get coffee at Coffee Emporium, and I saw that this thing was there, and I was horrified, and so I took a picture of it, and I put it on Twitter, and a bunch of my friends shared it. And at the time, I actually had privacy settings on my Twitter, and so my friend Dan was like, hey, you need to lift this up so I can share it. A bunch of council members got tweeted about it, and basically, along short of it, they had it moved within probably 72 hours. It was amazing. And I realized, like, even though I've been involved in social media and I see how quickly things go, it's just a different story when you're, like, you know, using it for, like, some sort of activism. And so I was really pleased with that. I was pleased with the city and how quickly they got it done. I was kind of surprised because I tried to petition, or not petition, but I tried to sort of talk to the construction company that was over, and he was like, we can put it wherever we want to. And so there's this misconception with ABLEs, which is what I like to call them. So ABLEs have this sort of idea, like, that the Americans with Disability Act is taking care of everything, and there are no more issues anymore. So, like, you know, we can kind of put this here if we need to because it's necessary to put this dumpster in a handicapped spot. Or people park at the grocery store, like, I'm only going to be a second, so I'm going to just run in. But people actually need those spots, and there's supposed to be a certain number of spots per area or per, you know, if you have a parking lot, a certain amount per lot. And I don't know that a lot of these rules are being sort of followed, or I don't know. I think there's some skirting going on, for lack of a better word. So I just started it. I was trying to figure out a way to name it. My friend Paul came up with a name, which I thought was pretty great, so we just stuck with it. And initially it was just on Twitter, and then I started a Facebook page just recently, so yeah, it's kind of moving a little bit. It's been fun. I never take pictures of cars that are displaying tags. If you were parked illegally in a blue spot and you do not have a tag, then beware. I have my phone with me at all times.
I mean, because it's not just regular people who do this. There's a picture of you of a restaurant that has its handicap pots taken up by the valet, and there's police mm-hmm. officers. How do you do it when it's also the establishments who aren't following the rules?
Yes, that is very true. One of the first things that I did, actually the one with the police officer, I actually sent to the chief of police first because I wanted to be sort of appropriate about it. I'm not trying to, you know, get myself in trouble or any of my loved ones. But that particular one, the officer was parked at a handicap meter outside of the Woodward Theater on Main Street during the vigil for Lila Alcorn. And as I was, my husband dropped me off. And so while I was waiting for him to return, I saw a bunch of people in wheelchairs with their families coming from, like, real, you know, blocks away. And I was really pretty mad about it, so I decided to take a picture of it. But, yeah, it wasn't like a thing to necessarily, like, shame people. It's just this sort of thing I'm trying to raise awareness. Like, hey, it is not okay to do this. You know, you have to actually have some sort of physical impairment that keeps you from being able to walk, which is why these tags exist. You know, it's like, it's not fair that you can use your grandma's tag or just park there because you're only going to be a second. We've had so many, my husband and I are very aware of this, obviously, so we see it all the time. People are like, I'm just running in to pick up my carryout food and coming back out to my car. And it's like the one handicapped spot in the parking lot. So I see it a lot at grocery stores in particular because people, don't want to lug their groceries back too far or whatever, but that's a big one, grocery stores.
Yeah, I'm sure, too, the argument that's often given is these spaces are hardly ever used. It's a waste. How do you respond to that?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
I'm sure people have also said these spaces are hardly ever used. It's a waste. Is there a reason these spaces aren't used as much, and how do you respond to that?
I have actually not done a whole lot of approaching with people. The few times that I have, there was one woman who just didn't have her tag displayed, and I was like, well, you know, hang it up so we know. But usually people don't, if I have said something to people, they are, like, too horrified to say anything back. So I don't usually get a whole lot of justification for it. They're usually like sort of terrified that somebody has called them out on their, you know, kind of poor behavior. But I'm not really sure. I mean, there are laws that dictate how many parking spots should be available. So that's something that, you know, isn't even set up by the disabled community necessarily. That's, you know, legal ramifications of the American Disability Act. So if there are too many, then oh well, you know, that's sort of, I think, a state guideline or a national guideline, not necessarily mine.
I mean, some of it seems like it's even accessibility that, you know, it's stuff, like what you said with the people who had to go blocks because it was being used, that it's not even available when people want to use it, and even that sometimes it's stuff like other things like prosthetics and stuff that can keep people from being able to get out if they don't have the right equipment and stuff that sometimes makes it so if people had more access to get out, would be using these spots more.
Yeah, I've noticed that one of the biggest things that we've had issues with is like objects in the striped area that's meant for a wheelchair lift, for vehicles with lifts, and that has been, you know, I like tweeted out to one of the local malls because they had a bike rack in it. I was like, that's not an appropriate place for a bike rack, that's for a wheelchair. And they happily moved it. And so people are like, when people leave shopping carts in it, or I don't even park in it. I've seen that a lot too, people parked in the striped areas. And I'm like, that's not a parking spot. it's almost like I have to kind of simmer down sometimes because it makes me so angry. You know, it frustrates me so much because I see the abuse so often. The other pet peeve I have is this sort of idea that if there is a blue meter, and it is after hours of the meter, then people have this misconception that it is no longer a handicap meter, which is not valid. If they read the Ohio Revised Code, it is like an all times 24-hour situation. And I encourage people to just do a Google search about their local laws regarding handicap parking, because it's a real eye-opener, like how much it is not enforced. But also what your rights are as a disabled person.
And you talked about it a little bit, but it has been 25 years since the ADA was enacted. How far do you think we've come, and how far do you think we have left to go?
Oh, goodness. That is a great question. I think that I was 12 when it went into, when it passed. So I don't know that I had a real awareness of it. Like I know I read about it. I know that it overwhelmingly a positive thing, but I didn't realize what kind of impact it would have for me later. I think that we still have a ton more work to do. I think that, you know, just as far as like ramps, the increase in ramps, especially on college campuses or places that are sort of grandfathered in before the ADA, you know, that they have some sort of historical, I don't know, sort of doesn't necessarily apply. I've been in some establishments where they either limit or deny elevator access to the building. Just this sort of idea that, you know, the ADA has taken care of everything is absolutely false. I know that we still have a lot of work to do, but I think that the biggest thing is trying to get some support from local authorities and creating your own sort of network of people that will rally for you on behalf of you to get things accomplished. That's been probably the biggest asset that I've had, is that having been very active on social media, I've sort of given the bug to a lot of other people, ables and other disabled, but you know, it's this kind of contagious thing when people see that there's an injustice. They're like, hey, wait, this isn't right, you know. And it's an eye-opener for them, too. So I think the more, or like the louder you can bang the drum, the better off we all are, as far as it might take 10 years, it might take 20, it might take another 25, but I think we can get there to even the playing field, but I think it might just take a little longer.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, with that, how have people responded to your social media activism? And it seems like, do you seem that think that's the way of the future for to sort of talk about these issues?
Well, I think social media provides people with like really good opportunity to voice their positions or concerns or issues to a larger audience. You know, like I have like, I don't know, 1,500 Facebook friends, and I'm not one of those people that will actually just like willy-nilly add people either. But, you know, it kind of gave me an opportunity to talk about my disability. I've been friends with a lot of people for 10 years or 15 years, and they've never asked and I've never mentioned it or something like that. So it's been a good learning experience for both my friends and myself. And just allowing me to kind of talk very candidly about what it's like being disabled, because it's not something I talk about often. And so people are really responding very positively to it. So if you're looking to reach a wide, or, you know, cast a wide net, then yeah, social media is definitely a good thing. And if you're...
Go ahead, sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I think in some ways, too, I mean, you're able to show people, I think it's in some ways also to show people that people with disabilities live very normal lives in a lot of mm-hmm. senses. You know, I think sometimes people think we live in bubbles and that we do all these special, I mean, you know, most of our lives aren't focused on our disabilities, and I think social media is another great way to show that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally. I would not have known about the petition if it weren't for social media. And if you mm-hmm. go to the Amputee Coalition of America page, it is just littered with pictures, just like the one that I made, of people sort of, you know, veterans and people working out and people hanging out with their families and their children and, you know, hiking up mountains and whatever. And it was like, my disability, my prosthesis is not a luxury. And that was the hashtag that was used because it was sort of deemed as so in the proposal. So it was, it's completely social media. They ended up with over 105,000 signatures, which is amazing. And that was totally done on social media. So with days to spare even because the deadline was August 30th. So
It's really well. And I think in some ways, too, it's just saying my prosthesis is a way for me to live like everybody else does in some mm-hmm. ways. Not that you couldn't without it, but it just helps you even more to do that.
Mm-hmm. I actually even used social media when I was getting this prosthesis. Like, just mm-hmm. I crowdsourced the color of my leg. So my microprocessor and he came in different colorways, and I literally had a vote on Facebook. Like, pick the color of my leg, you guys. And everybody had such a blast with it. So by the time I, you know, kind of posted, I made it a life event when I got my leg, and I said, became bionic, and it had like almost 800 likes or something like this. It was crazy, but probably the most liked thing I've ever posted on Facebook. So I think it's just really, it's fun, and it makes people sort of okay with it when you involve them in the process. Mm-hmm. It becomes more comfortable for everybody, so.
Now, how can people, is there anything else that people can help with to make sure their legislators know about this or anything else, or even with just with the parking spaces, anything that that people can help out with?
Well, absolutely. Definitely write your legislators about the proposal for Medicare. Any story you can tell that it, you know, talks about your personal autonomy and what these changes could do for that. Absolutely do that, because it's not really, there's no such thing as too much. The more people they hear from, because there's this misconception that we're like 3% of the population or something like that, but there are a ton of people with disabilities and a ton of amputees, because anytime you have war, you have a lot of limb loss. So definitely write your legislators. You can always end up obviously following Handy Slap on both Twitter and Facebook. I know I've had friends leave notes on cars, which I think is really adorable, and they'll post it on my page. You know, very polite, like, hey, don't do this. It's not it's not okay to do that. So if you feel like doing that, then more power to you. Try not to get hurt by anybody. What else? I guess, yeah, I mean, I think that if there was an increase in local authorities doing, you know, writing tickets for these things, I think that that would diminish a lot of the abuse, but there's still going to be some. But I think that my next step is hopefully getting some sort of support from our law enforcement to sort of amp up this. I mean, I know we have bigger fish to fry in Cincinnati, but once that storm has kind of died down a little bit, I would love to be able to, you know, see an increase in punishing the abusers of the handicapped parking spots.
Well, it's true, and this affects a lot of people, whether it's the elderly or it's somebody who's in a wheelchair. It affects a ton of people who need those spaces and who it's their way to get out, and sometimes if they're not available, they can't get out.
Right. Yeah, that happened to me recently, actually, because somebody was parked too close to my car in the striped area, which is not a parking spot, and I couldn't get back in my car. I had to literally get in the passenger side and climb over, which is pretty hard to do when you're an amputee.
I think that would be hard to do, just even me, as I'm like, I would have trouble doing that.
I think it's hard for everybody.
Thank you so much. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us today?
I think I'm okay. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you, and yeah, hopefully we'll just keep fighting the good fight.
Yeah, thank you so much for bringing awareness to this. It's definitely something that's very important.
Yeah, if you just for social media plugs, Handy Slap on both Twitter and Facebook, and then the hashtag that the Medicare proposal petition is using is hashtag not a luxury. So.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jason.